you choose to drink. There's wine and cheese. There's cookies. Judy Clayton made all the shortbread. Thanks for doing that, Judy. And over in the far corner, I know it's a bit crowded, we have a small silent auction. We only have three items, but they're very good items. I hope you take a look at them. They're all basically from North Dumfries. One is an old photo from North Dumfries, courtesy of Air News. One is a beautiful art photograph from the Anna and Alex Krajewski out of Cambridge from North Dumfries up on Alps Road. And I can't think of the fellow's name. Irene, help me out. Alan McKay, thank you very much for the beautiful piece of turning in cherry wood. So please bid. It's all for our fundraising, and we certainly can use your assistance. We are not government funded. We don't ask for handouts, although the township does give us free space, and we certainly appreciate that. But we do fund ourselves. Now, I do have to give a shout out to the Cambridge North Dumfries Community Foundation, and they have provided us with a grant of about $3,000, which has certainly given us a chance to get up off the ground. John Egoff is here today. John, where are you? He's the chair of the board. He's way at the back. If you're looking for something to apply for from that foundation, John's here today. Ben Benninger, counselor candidate, is here today from Ward 3. Sue Foxton, mayor candidate for North Dumfries, is here. Kim Denowden, mayor candidate, is here as well. Kim, where are you? At the back. And just for the two of you, I want you to understand something. Jeff and I were talking about this building earlier. We think we should have a brew pub here. So we're looking for zoning. We can be bought. Oh, and Ken Ceiling's here. Ken, do I need to buy you too? Where are you? Ken, we really appreciate you taking time out and representing the region here today. And you've been a big supporter of history, and I know you have some family heritage here as well, so thanks for being here. Rich Mills is here. He's the head of the Waterloo region, historical, past president. Was somebody from there anyway, weren't you?
Nobody.
He's representing them anyway. Linda Wetham is here. She's a mayoral candidate from Cambridge. Where are you, Linda? I saw you wandering around. Okay. Any other candidates I missed? Yes, I did. Rod Rolleman, I'm sorry, we talked outside and my mistake. Rod's a candidate for Ward 1, correct? Anyone else I've missed? Derek? Yes, Derek Ostner, candidate Ward 2. And who else have I got? I haven't got my glasses on. Vic Lauren, Ward 1.
But this is not an all candidate.
Yeah, I know. When you're privately funded, you grovel. You know what I mean? How are you? Are you Jim?
Yes.
Nice to meet you, Jim. Jim Murray here, 90 years old, wanted to come out here today, one of the oldest residents in the township, and we're so happy he would be here today. We have people here from London, from Guelph, from the Scott Clyde section of North Dumfries Township. In fact, Helen Bridgman brought the Tweedsmere Women's Institute Tweedsmere book from the Scott Clyde Women's Institute, which we've never seen before. So it's on the table. I hope you're taking a look at that. Purpose of this event today is awareness and fundraising. Awareness, you're here, the materials that we have around, and the fundraising, of course, I've talked about buying the tickets and the silent auction. You got a trivia package when you came in today, and I hope you've had time to do some of that. There'll be time at the end a little bit to do some of that as well, and we're going to take that up at the end of the day. Now, with logistics, washrooms are just around behind here, and you can tell it's crowded. The floor is not even, so please take care as you're moving around throughout the day. So, North Dumfries Historical Preservation Society, what is it? Well, it's a group of people that got together after the plowing match in 2012 and after the Dickey Settlement History Project was conducted in 2011 and decided that we needed to try for the third time to do something about historical preservation in North Dumfries Township. And I'm not talking buildings. We're talking about materials, community records, photos, those things. The LACAC group, or whatever they're referred to today, Municipal Heritage, I guess, they look after buildings and things. We don't have anything to do with that. We're strictly materials and trying to preserve those. Now, the first attempt to do this happened about 10 years ago. Ben Menninger was the person who took that on as a lead, and he initiated that, and I had the opportunity to sit on that committee. And for various reasons, even though we had a great proposal, we didn't move forward with that. There was a second attempt. Bill Schneider from the east side of the township out there on Cheese Factory Road, he initiated a project, and it got going, and it faded a bit. Now, this is the third time, and we're hoping three times is a charm. We've been at this a year and a half. We've got about 75, 80 people here today. I think that's a good sign for some longevity for this organization. We meet twice a month. Second Tuesday of the month, we have a work session, and we meet at our office, which is courtesy of the Township of North Dumfries, at the North Dumfries Community Center. And the last Tuesday of the month, we meet again, and that's our business meeting for each month. We'll probably be doing more work sessions over time, because as more and more materials come in, we'll have more and more materials to work on and clean and fix and catalog and all of that. And if you're interested in supporting us and or interested in volunteering with us, we hope that you'll take the opportunity to become a member. It's only a $10 fee. The forms are at the front door, and you're welcome to get those if you didn't on the way in, to get them on the way out. All of it supports the operations of the organization. We are all volunteers. There's no paid people whatsoever. So that's enough about that. Let's talk about Black Horse Corners. Back sometime in the 1950s, 1960s, Jeff Steger's brother, Red, Ron, when he was 10 years old. So what year was that?
So in 1967, it was a centennial celebration because it's a centennial year. My brother was in the place.
And he read in roll the history of Black Horse Corners. And so Ron couldn't be here today. Apparently he's in Greenland enjoying the sun and warmth. But his daughter's here today, Jeff's niece, and you can tell that height runs in the family when you meet Naomi. And Naomi's going to read that same script that her dad read back in 1967, and it's a good background piece for North Dumfries, or excuse me, for Black Horse Corners in North Dumfries. So, Naomi, can you come up?
Yes, you can applaud for Naomi. She got the height? Yes.
Yeah, that's genetic. The character that's represented in this piece is Josiah Joyce, and I'm not a boy, but suspend your disbelief for a second, and maybe I'll read it from that perspective. So it says, "Hi, my name is Josiah Joyce, and I'm 10 years old, this year of 1867, which my parents tell me is Confederation year. I live in the small village of Black Horse, which is on the dirt road between Ayr and Berlin. My father, who I was named after, just bought the tavern from Mrs. Newcomb last year. The tavern is also a hotel. There are 5 spare bedrooms and stabling for 8 horses. Pa has a picture of a black horse painted on the side of our building, so we have lots of customers. Abraham Snyder just took Annie Montgomery out for a ride with our best horse and buggy about an hour ago. Pa said that in 1854, voting for the township election was done right here in the Black Horse Tavern. There was an awful lot of excitement. Pa said that Nelson Newcomb lost $25 in damages in the big fight they had. I kept quite busy every day, filling the wood box, fetching water for the horses, making the beds, and cleaning the rooms. Sometimes I get a cent or two for helping the travelers by carrying their suitcases and feeding and brushing their horses. This morning, a fine carriage drew up with a man and woman in it. The man must have been quite wealthy because he gave me 5 cents for feeding and brushing down his horses. He said his name was John A. McDonald, and he was going to Berlin to talk about the uniting of the provinces of Canada. Tonight there will be a husking bee at Benjamin Snyder's farm and a dance. When I was passing the Snyder's house, I could smell the delicious aroma of pork pies, fresh bread, and her community famous shoe fly pie. While I was resting in my treehouse, I heard John McKenzie practicing the fiddle. He's from Galt, where there's a lot of Scotsmen. He's going to play for the dance. I hope I don't get a red cob, for I don't want to kiss any girl on my right, even if it is Annie. James Bruce, who lives behind Emma Spaeth, right on the edge of the dam, says there's a lot of big fish in there. I broke my old willow pole because I was careless and left it near the stable, and Abraham Snyder in his rush today ran over it. I decided to go to the bush and whittle me another. After my dinner, which was pork hocks and beans, I went to the bush in search of a new fishing pole. I noticed that there was some men cutting a huge pine tree for the barrel maker. Being inquisitive, I stayed a while. I heard that he had just shipped a load of barrels to Berlin. After tiring of this, I went over to the blacksmith shop. In one corner, I saw several steel hoops that the barrel maker was to use on his barrels. Robert Montgomery, the blacksmith, was putting shoes on James Piper's new workhorse. Robert said that he'd put shoes on about 10,000 horses. There's an awful smell coming from the tannery. I'll be glad when the wind blows in the opposite direction. John Basted, the shoemaker, just went out for some hide to make my father's new work gloves and my new boots for school. School at Roseville will be starting soon. In the meantime, my mom is teaching me to read, write, and do arithmetic. She's making me some overalls and a shirt for school. Some people down the road grow flax and make goods out of it on a loom. Mom sent me to the store for some buttons and pins. There were a couple of ladies there shopping and gossiping. I wonder why ladies wear such big skirts and have such puffed up sleeves in their dresses. Being I was as far as the store, I cut across the meadow to the cheese factory on the side of the hill near Benjamin Snyder's barn. I had an appetite for that delicious cheese, and they just happened to take a wedge out. They gave me a piece, and boy, did I like it. I had to return home with my purchase of buttons and pins, and before I got there, I smelled fresh bread at Annie Spaeth's house and decided to pay her a visit, for I knew her mom would give me a generous serving of bread smothered with fresh butter. My friend Annie has long, blonde pigtails, and she has far more freckles than I have. I can hear the clopping of hooves on the bridge over our small stream. I'd better get going back to the inn, for Pa will be hollering soon for me anyways.
Naomi, thanks very much for that. I hope that gives you a little bit of an encapsulation of sort of the history of Black Horse Corners. Jeff Steger, whose farm we're on, is going to talk a little bit more about Black Horse Corners.
Well, thanks so much for coming out today, folks. It's a cool day, but it's just listening to... Okay. thanks for coming out today, folks. I just love hearing that story. You know, I don't know if you're like me, but you hear those stories and you think, wow, what would that have been like? You know, would I have been able to understand what that person was feeling and reflect on our own lives now and in the future, too, when history is written and those people will reflect on why people got together and lived their lives. And you can tell from that story, you know, this was a village of a pump maker and a sawmill and the creamery here, and a community just like the 60, 70 people in this room. We would be a Black Horse community with our various skills and attributes. And just delighted to hear about the 1967, the centennial year. John English could speak so much more about that and how this is a typical, would be a typical town in Ontario dealing with those changes in their society at the time. Having said that, so welcome to Black Horse Corners. I hope you take a moment and look through this window pane here. There's a line on it, and if you line up your eyes so that you see the two uprights is the stoplights, the Black Horse Inn is that square block on the side. So that there's a few items along the around the edge of the room that show some more detail. Huge bunch of artifacts. All this stuff here. Has been assembled over the years. My mother very kindly put together in packages. Thanks to the North Dumfries Heritage Preservation Society, it is now digitized, and hopefully that'll be a web resource in the future. So our family moved here in 1910, and that time only anecdotal evidence of the village was there. My father talked to a guy who was an old bachelor down the road here, and then things really got rolling in 1990 because that was when Union Gas put a pipeline through the farm, and they did the archaeological excavation down there and discovered the ruins of the Black Horse Inn, the livery stable, and an outdoor cookhouse, I guess you'd call it. And further to that then, my parents, it was this building was falling down. I mean, the sky was showing through here, and that wall was spreading to a 6 inches gap at the top. And so the restoration begun, and we straightened the walls and put the tie rods across. And the deal was you needed to have the original shape of the building, roof line, and openings. And for instance, we couldn't have, you know, knocked out the end wall and put a garage in here or something like that. I had a delightful chat here with Miss Cunningham, wherever you are. She was on the Heritage Committee at the time when my parents applied for that. Ken was on that committee as well. And so that was done in 1990, and here we are today. We like to host. Doors open every other year. This is the first time we had an event like this. I'm so glad you all came out. And hopefully we'll have some more events like this, and that'll be a good thing. Without going through all the history of the Black Horse Inn, it's going to be digitized. I can remember as a kid, this was a pig pen, and the pigs ran around here. Then it was a horse pen. Then the roof fell in, and then the roof got put up again, and here we are today. So anyway, thanks so much for coming out today. Just enjoy all the artifacts, and hope you have good luck with checking out what all the items are on the side of the wall there. Okay, thank you.
I guess I should have apologized for all the flies. I would have chased them all down, but there was far too many of them. But keep in mind that we are sitting right next to a working barn here. There's Jersey cattle right next to us here. So, and this is probably the warmest place on the farm right now. So, one of the reasons that a lot of people came today, and I was amazed when people would phone me for tickets, and they said, I understand John English is speaking. I really want to hear John English speak. I've never heard John English speak. I recognize him, but I don't think I've ever heard him speak. I didn't know a lot about John. Irene gave me his bio, and when I read it, I thought, holy smokes, this is really an amazing bio. And it's my pleasure to do the introduction for John. So let me just give you a little bit of his background here. He's a native of Plattsville, so he's a relatively local to this neighborhood and knows this area very well. And, of course, he went to school here, got his Bachelor of Arts degree, University of Waterloo, but he did go to Harvard and got his Ph.D. there. He's been a professor at the University of Waterloo. He's a Doctor of Literature honorary from Wilfrid Laurier University, and he's a former Member of Parliament for Kitchener, something that I think is, you know, these days politicians don't get a lot of credit. But I'm a firm believer that people who put themselves forward for public office deserve our respect and our applause because it's a tremendous job. Rod and I had this discussion earlier today. A lot of work, a lot of expectation, and not a lot of thanks. So for anyone in that position, I think we certainly owe them a vote of thanks. John's also been the ambassador for landmines and special envoy to the election of Canada to the United Nations Security Council, excuse me. President of the Canadian Institute of International Affairs, co-editor of the Canadian Historical Review, chair of the board of the Canadian Museum of Civilization and the Canadian War Museum, executive director of the Center for International Governance, founding director of the Billy Graham Center for Canadian Contemporary International History at the University of Toronto. He's been a visiting professor with the Canadian Forces. He's written books, articles. He's done the biography of Lester Pearson, one of my favorite prime ministers. He's also been the official biographer of Pierre Trudeau, and the family asked for him to do that. He's a member of the Order of Canada, and he's wearing his pin today. He's the first person I met that actually wore one of those, because I don't know anyone else who's a member of the Order of Canada. And he's a fellow of the Royal Society of Canada. He's on a whole lot of boards and things, and he's come all the way from Toronto today to sit here at Black Horse Corners. He's a man who's worked with the big cheeses, and now he's back to the origin of the cheese himself. So, John, welcome. We really appreciate you being here today.
Well, I'll never forget that introduction. This has been a great pleasure. I had no idea that so many people would be here, but I think Irene and her group who've organized this, it's quite an extraordinary accomplishment. I don't think I've been with this many politicians for a long time either, and it's a pleasure to be with politicians in this area rather than Toronto's mayor, I think the mayor here. And I do support very strongly the notion that a brew pub be established here, and with Mayor Sealing there, it should also be an LRT stop.
Because it's a brew pub.
Yes, absolutely. And it's very true that polling stations were often taverns in the 19th century, because taverns were everywhere. And, of course, this Black Horse Corners was a tavern. There were two taverns nearby in Roseville. And, of course, there were taverns in Plattsville and a famous one in Bright that survived when I was growing up. And Plattsville was then dry when I was growing up. And taverns were everywhere, and the alcoholic content of politics was extremely high. In fact, there's a serious critic who said the history of Canadian politics in the 19th century could be written on the basis of alcoholic content. And I think there's much truth in that. We were a frontier society. We were a rough society. And because we were a frontier society, just as frontier societies today, people drank a lot. Mainly whiskey. Canadian whiskey was cheap, incredibly cheap, and it helped you deal with the cold winter, with the flies that are everywhere, and with the difficulties of life. Life expectancy was much shorter, and it was a much harder life, but one that seemed to have a lot of promise. When Irene asked me to speak today, I wasn't quite sure what to say about North Dumfries. I applaud the effort to form a historical preservation society here, and clearly the one that attracts so much support. But I do have a connection, and it's a very direct one. My great-grandfather was born in Roseville, 1852. He undoubtedly knew Black Horse Corners very well, as did his father, who had emigrated from Germany. I know Black Horse Corners. I called it Black Horse Hill. My youth, and it was much steeper, is my memory. When was it? Because I used to drive to university. You mentioned University of Waterloo. I lived at home when I drove to university. It was a much steeper hill, and then it got much smoother.
They improved that road, and it became a provincial highway. They put an 100-foot roadbed, and then made a proper grade on it.
Yeah, you're always afraid to drive home, and I would go by New Dundee because I was afraid I'd slide down because I didn't have snow tires. My father couldn't afford snow tires. So I was terrified of this hill, thinking I would never get up it. I appreciate Jeff giving me that information, but I appreciate much, much, much more that when we drove in today, he said, the spots in the front are for the seniors, and you go to the back. Like the introduction, I'll never forget that. I did write some notes, because I'm not used to speaking on the history of North Dumfries. When Irene asked me to speak, she said she wanted me to speak on how the local is related to history as it's studied and history as it's known. And I think we see the future through history. When you read the business pages, for example, what you do see very regularly is what has happened in the past. What has the market done in the past? When we talk about 2008, we talk about the Great Depression. When we talk about what comes in the future, this year is the 100th anniversary of the First World War, all kinds of conferences, all kinds of books, so many of them talking about what was the significance of this war. The significance was enormous, but so many relate it to the troubles now. The places are so much the same. Eastern Europe, the major battlefield, declining empires and rising empires, Germany then, China now, United Kingdom then, United States now. We look at the future in this way, but I would argue, rightly and wrongly, that we tend to see history through lens which are local. And that's as true for us as it is true in Iraq today. It's as true, we try to rise above it. We try to see things beyond it. But it is important that we see things locally, because our lessons, ourselves, our genetic code is for height as well as history, does remain. And I think the life of Peter Schossenberg, my great-grandfather, is an indication of this. He was born in 1852 in Roseville, and he was a German by background. he had come, his father had come to this country, as so many did, in the 1830s and 1840s, a time of great immigration, particularly from Germany, which was not yet benefiting from the Industrial Revolution, which had so much affected England and so much affected in a different way Scotland. Very little remains of Peter Schossenberg today. There's a grave in Plattsville, and this is his Bible, and it's been well read, not by me, I could add, and it's a German Bible. And at the back of it, he's got two names. They're written into their script, and the script is clearly that of someone who doesn't write well. It's my grandmother and my great uncle. One was born July 22nd of 1888. My grandmother was born July 20th, 1893. I don't know what the significance of the close dates is. But the Bible is all that really remains apart from his grave. But it's German. But neither Clara, who was named after her German grandmother who never came to Canada, nor Harry, who was really Henry, who was named after his grandfather, Heinrich, who never came to Canada, would have understood it. They lost their language within one generation. Peter himself, I didn't see, but I did know his wife, Annie O'Connell, was her maiden name. They married in sometime about 1875, 1876, it's unclear. She was very young when she married, later to have a child, and she had three children. There's one other son born in 1900, my Uncle George. The thing that's significant is this is a family that in many ways did not make it. His family, his ancestors, his father, were a very successful German family. So successful that a relative, not distant, was a knight. It's the only part of my family that has any significance, beyond any historical significance. They were from Mecklenburg, which is northern Germany, a very poor part in those days of northern Germany. It's near the city of Schwerin, and they lived there. They had an estate, and he seems to have run off with one of the cooks in the estate. So he came to Canada, and his name was, and I have the name here, it's Johann Christoph Friedrich Heinrich Scharfenberg. It's not Schossenberg. So he arrives in Waterloo County. He lands here. And why does he land there? Because there's a Lutheran church there, or as they would call it, evangelical or evangelisch. He went to church. The Bible undoubtedly dates from that church, and the services were in German. And I suspect he didn't learn much about English, and he wasn't able to integrate very well in the society. We go to the names of Black Horse Corners. You have a Bechtel, you have a Snyder, you have a Newcomb, you have a Montgomery. What do you have? You've got people who are German, you have people who are English, and they work together, as they did in Waterloo County until the difficulties of the First World War. It was a kind of a bilingual town. I did write a history of Berlin, so I'm familiar with Kitchener very much so. It's a town that managed to work together, because after all, Queen Victoria was a German, wasn't she? She spoke German. And the Kaiser, the books reveal now, the books about World War I, his favorite aunt was Queen Victoria, although he disliked her son a great deal. But when he came in 1905 to visit, he came to England and he spoke English almost flawlessly. And the Queen spoke German as well. And yet those two countries that were so closely tied by background, by genetic code, fought the worst war of the probably ever. And we're not sure who started it. My German uncle, George Schossenberg, used to tell me on my grandmother's lawn that really it was the British who started World War I. All the rest of my family, who are English, British conservatives, say, no, it was the Germans, they're just awful people. But of course, this is what happened. So Johann Christoph Friedrich Scharfenberg came here, decided his name didn't work in English, changed his name to Schossenberg, and doesn't seem to have done very well. He doesn't show up in the census, doesn't show up in newspapers. We'd have newspapers there. And all I know about my grandfather is, my great-grandfather is, that he worked in the brickyard in Plattsville carrying bricks So much so that when he died in his final years, and he lived a long time, their long-lived family, he was bent over like this because of the weight of the bricks over the years. I did know my great-grandmother. She lived to be 98. She came from Stratford, Ontario. How did they meet? My guess is probably the railway. The railway was the best place to get jobs in that day, and of course, through Berlin, as it then was, to Stratford was a major rail line, and probably he went to Stratford because it was a booming town with the railway. And so was North Dumfries. That's probably why he came here. In 1861, the population of North Dumfries was 4,161 people. Galt, the metropolis nearby, was 3,069. Berlin was only 1,956 people. This was prosperous agricultural land, and you can see why this community thrived. The Black Horse Corners was not an anomaly. Ayr was thriving. Roseville was thriving at 150 people at this time. The future Berlin was the poorest community in the area. These are rough calculations, but it looks like the per capita income was about $160. Guelph was about $200. And this area, North Dumfries, is about 227. So the richness of the land made this a very different kind of place, a place that people came to, a place like Peter Schossenberg and his father could find work, and you do go to find work. My great-grandmother, as I said, married my grandfather, and he was a Lutheran, and she was a Roman Catholic. I don't know where they met. I don't know how it happened, but they did marry. They married in Plattsville, and she never saw her relatives again in her life. She left her faith. When I knew her, we went to Plattsville United Church together, and she went regularly. And she put behind her all of this background. She was from Tipperary, a Roman Catholic from Tipperary. Her father was William O'Connell. He was a laborer in Stratford, like most Irish who came out were. Ironically, Peter Schossenberg's grandson and her nephew were the only relatives I had who fought in Germany, the first in the First World War, the second in the Second World War. I shouldn't say the first one died, Daniel O'Connell. Imagine that name, dying in defense of the British Empire. But he fought. He signed up in 1914, 1915, went over and died in 1916 in France fighting the Germans. My cousin, whom I knew, second cousin I knew well, Harry Schossenberg's son, he lived in Fort Erie. He signed up in 1939 and went overseas and fought. And he's the only one of my relatives. They all served in the war, and some were over Germany because they were in bomber command. But he actually fought through and landed up in Germany. He landed on D-Day and went on beyond. And he went to Mecklenburg and traced the family background and came back and with the story, he said, my family actually amounted to something. They hadn't amounted to anything in Canada, but they had amounted to something in Germany. So it's not a case always of the story that you leave a country and you come here and you make it. Many do, many don't. So Peter left Waterloo County when he was young. There isn't much trace of him. He did get married, as I said. He had children, the children's record, there are gravestones. But it brings me back to Black Horse County. And how many people are like Peter Schossenberg? When you think about his life and the life of his father, Mecklenburg in 1830s, when he emigrated here, was very, very far away. He must have gone out to Bremen or Hamburg and taken a boat, landed in Quebec, taken the railway, ended up in... Why do you go to Waterloo County? Because there's Germans there. There aren't Germans in very much of Canada, especially in those days, but Berlin was a place you could go. And you look for your one thing you can associate with, which is the religion. So he associates with the Lutheran religion. The Bible, of course, was very meaningful for them. they remained Baptists as long as they could until the Baptist church closed in Plattsville. He comes here, he loses, the language is lost in one generation, and it's ironic, the family Bible is there in German script, and they could not have read it because they went to public school. My grandmother didn't go very far in public school, to grade 8. But she never kept up the German language. So Johann Christoph Friedrich Heinrich, whose great uncle was a knight, a von Scharfenberg, lost his name, lost his identity, and probably lost his contact. His wife lost her family. She never saw again her mother and father after she decided not to be a Roman Catholic. So it reminds us of our past. It wasn't calm and easy and nice stories. It was very difficult. People made very difficult choices to come here. It's an enormously difficult choice. The choice was made apparently because he fell in love. Now we hear romantic stories, the Charles and Diana and Edward VIII, and they don't end so well. But we hear these stories, and we're reminded that they make these choices, and the choices we hear about very often turn out very well, and moving to the New World so often turned out very well, but not always. But these differences, I want to stress, these people worked together. They had a common purpose. As you described the workmen and Black Horse Corners before, you can see how there was integration. But in the end, the community dies. Traditions die. And thank goodness, some enmities die. Roman Catholics and Protestants now intermarry regularly. It's not always the easiest, but they do. We don't fight those battles. One of the most famous comments in Canadian politics in the 19th century was, this was not a politics about Canada, it was a refighting of the Battle of the Boyne. The best explanation of Canadian politics is religion until you get to very recent times. Irish Catholics voted liberal, Anglican Protestants and voted conservative. That explains how you are. In my own case, my mother was Scottish Presbyterian, and my father was English conservative, Northern Irish was even worse, conservative. And the result was, in the morning, my mother would go out and vote, and she'd vote liberal, and in the afternoon, my father would go out and cancel her vote. Wow. Only twice in their life that I know of did they ever vote the same way. But they got along well, so it didn't matter. But I guess it is the getting along well that is important. So many of these quarrels in the past, as we look at the world beyond us, we look at places like Iraq, we look at the quarrels in Ukraine, which are an Orthodox Catholic fight. So many ways, we look at the Middle East, where it's Sunni and Shiite. We look at the United States, where fights among religious groups seem to be all too common these days. And we recognize these are very dangerous kinds of quarrels. And they're kinds of quarrels that cause a great deal of human misery and harm, but we can understand it because it is part of our own history. And on a different level, Black Horse Corners tells us a great deal. I just finished a book on the Arctic, and one of the most intriguing stories of the Arctic, because someone's in Greenland. Is it your brother?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know whether anyone's read Jared Diamond's book about where he talks about the Greenland Norse settlement. And the Norse settled in Greenland, and this was not a small settlement. This was a large settlement, and until roughly 1410, maybe 10 or 15 years here, they had a Catholic church that reported to Rome. They had priests that came out. They had an active agricultural society that was there. Life went on. It was a small civilization that thrived. Then all of a sudden, it disappears. And Jared Diamond argues it's because of environmental change. The world gets colder. They get cut off from Iceland, which supplied so many of the goods. They get cut off from Norway. But suddenly there was a chill that entered the polar air in that part of the world in that time. And the Norse settlement disappears. It also disappears in Newfoundland. We didn't even know it was there until fairly recently. One of the major interpretations, it was an environmental reason. They saw things happening and things changed. And as we look at Black Horse Corners, pump maker Jacob Bechtel and wagon maker Samuel Hooper and an inn nearby. It was sold for $1,000 in 1874. 1875, it was sold for $15. What happened? It was a fire. There was a strong west wind, apparently, and destroyed the entire inn. But simultaneously, the water levels in Eden Creek, and I got this from the excellent story in the New York Air News, was being lowered, and the businesses needed the water. They didn't need the kind of drought that was occurring to survive. So what happens? This community that had life, that had people, that had a history, suddenly disappears, and we're commemorating it today. But it reminds us that in a generation, we may have a world that's very much unlike the world that we know, individually and collectively, that things that happen far away can affect us so very much. And in terms of looking at the world today, as we look at climate change, we can look around us and we can understand it better. If we talk remotely about climate change, it has little meaning. We use symbols like polar bears in the cover of Time magazine and on an ice floe saying, this is what's going to happen. The polar bears are dying off. But our own community, we can understand it. Life changes more quickly than we expect. And change that comes externally, change that comes suddenly, can very dramatically alter our life. But it's important for us, looking at our history, looking at the artifacts, to understand who we were, where we came from, and what it all means for our life today. And thanks very much. It's been a great pleasure speaking to you.
Thank you, John, for coming out and speaking to us today. I knew when I interviewed you for the Air News, that when we were having our first fundraiser, that you would be the perfect choice. So thank you very much for coming and sharing just a fraction of your knowledge.
Well, thank you very much. I expect this is from Black Horse Tavern, isn't it? I wanted to also say thanks for so many friends showing up, including someone I went through grade 1 to 8 with today. So thank you very much. And also the Waterloo Historical Society mafia that's sitting up here.
I said at the beginning I had never heard John English speak before, and I'm glad I finally had that opportunity. John and I have a common interest, which is history. I'm a historian by trade and spent many years teaching that for years and years. And I always found that the most important thing with history to make it worthwhile for people is to do exactly as John does, and that's to personalize it in a story form. Then people have an interest with it, and it connects to them personally. And, you know, that's an interesting thing for history, but the other piece that I really appreciated in John's comments was the fact that he doesn't leave history in the past. He brings it forward and connects it to the life that we have now. Because history by itself is interesting, but history by itself is useless unless it is brought forward and connected to the current world in which we live, so that we have it as a perspective to understand who we are and why we do things the way we do them. Because without that, I don't know how we actually make good decisions. I really don't. So, John, thanks so much for that. I thought you were just outstanding. Really enjoyed it. So, a couple things to do here. We're going to make some thank yous. And then we're going to do some draw prizes. We're going to give you the answers to the trivia questions. And then we'll start to wrap up. So, first of all, as I said before, thanks to Irene for the idea, and thanks to Jeff for hosting. Let me just say a few things about our sponsors here. We had a variety of people who sponsored us today, and I don't have the list in front of me, so I'm doing this by memory, so help me if I forget. McKay, sorry. Is he here? Where's Al? Al, thank you very much. Thank you for the work. Thank you for the donation. Really appreciate that. We had donations from the Air News, who provided the historic picture for our draw, from Alex and Anna Krajewski, who in fact did the painting for us for the plowing match poster as well. Excellent artists, both of them, in the city of Cambridge, They provided the beautiful art piece at the back. Oak Ridge Acres, our friends down there, provided the coffee and the milk and the organic milk and cream, the sugar, and the cups, and they also provided us with some of the cheese for the event today. We have a sponsor in Paris, a little place called Swiss in Paris. It's a little tiny cheese shop on the main street, provided us with the majority of our cheese today. Barry's Asparagus Farm provided us with the crackers. And who am I missing, Gail? Oh, I forgot, first of all, which I mentioned already, the Cambridge North Dumfries Community Fund, which is a major supporter for us, and also the Township of North Dumfries, for which we would not have this organization if they did not provide us with the space. I haven't done Bob Marshall yet. Where is he? If you don't know Bob Marshall, it's this little young fella sitting up here at the keyboard, and I ran into him the first time at the community club, and he was playing there, and we found that we had some common elements in our past, too. We were both teachers, both taught grade 7 and 8 for years, both taught music, and we're both still not crazy yet, so that's a good thing. And we wanted to say thanks to Bob for coming out.
Yeah.
These guys are talking about making it a brewery. Before all you people came in, I thought it'd be a wonderful place for a recording studio.
It's all in your perspective and history. And we've given Bob a small gift on behalf of all of us for his time today as well. I want to thank Kate Cressman, who's here today. Kate is volunteering and helped us with all the table settings and things. Really appreciated that. And I'm going to just name all of our committee members that were here helping out today. And if I've missed anyone, please yell at me. Sandy McDonald, Zora Jokic, Jeff Stager, Karen Campbell, Judy Clayton, my wife Gail Rohde, Rosemary Phillips, Janine Babster, and Irene Schmidt-Adney. Who did I miss? Anybody? Otherwise, they'd kill me at the next meeting. All right, so I'm not trying to belabor this much longer here. So we're going to have Irene come up. She's going to give the answers to the trivia. You can mark your own. You don't have to pass them back to anybody. That's fine. And when we're done, we're going to do draw prizes for 4 prizes. And that'll be basically the end of our day. But we hope that you'll stay and enjoy a little bit more music, some food, more wine if you would like. And please bid on our silent auction if you can, to help us in our financial support for this organization. And we hope you've had a great time today as well. So first, Irene.
We've decided that the winner will get their name in the Air News. So quite a prize. Okay, number 1, Wagon Bolster. Number 2, Cow Milking Setup. Number 3, Drag Harrow Spreader. Number 4, Root Crop Chopper. Number 5, weight scale.
Dispelling count.
Number 6, intake manifold. Number 7, Whipple tree. 8, clay field tiles. 9, hand power cultivator. 10, pine bough cobweb sweeper. 11, wagon tongue. 12, honeycomb centrifuge. 13, scarecrow. Did you see the scarecrow? 14, two-person crosscut saw. 15, cow collar. 16, cheese mold. 17, milk can, 18, honeycomb equipment, 19, silo filling funnel, and 20, antique fence posts. Now, did anybody see number 21? That was the mysterious item. Is there anybody that saw number 21? There you go. Okay, well, that was just kind of thrown in there to see if anybody was following the rules. So, how many people got all the answers? I did. Is there any back in the back? Okay. Come and see me with your sheet, and we'll make sure you get your name in the Air News.
Judy, are you up? Where is Judy Clayton? Judy, can you hold up that arrangement off the table, the one that's for the prize? Come on up here, Janine. We'll do that. We'll do the prize draw.
Oh, okay.
Yep. So the first name out of this bag here, that lovely arrangement which has been donated, and I forget where did you donate that?
Yes.
Courtesy of Irene and the Air News, who's been so good to us. So root around in here. If it's mine, I'm throwing it back in. John English. I think that's perfect. Okay, you can take all the other John English ones out now. Ah, oh, there you go. He's such a gentleman. Well, then she should get that. Now, the other three draws, there are three arrangements, three mum plants here, yellow mum plants, one here, one at the back, I think, and one outside. So if you're one of the three in these next three draws, then please take one on the way out the door. Margaret Clarkson, where are you, Margaret? Now, you came from the Clyde Scott side of the township. Well, I'm glad you're here, and I'm glad you got a gift. Next one. Al Detweiler, I saw you. Where were you? We were talking to you earlier. Where's Al? Is he at the back door? Al, you got one of the prizes, okay? You got one of the mum plants. And the last mum plant. The last mum's last plant. Kim Denowden. There you go, Kim. So please stay. Please socialize. Please talk to John or anyone else that you find that's interesting around here. And there's lots of people who are campaigning. You can talk to them, too. They'll be happy to talk to you. And have some more wine. Thank you very much.